Rediscovered Radio, women's voices, women's music from the WYSO archives is brought to you in part by the Levitt Pavilion in downtown Dayton. Building community through music, one free concert at a time.
What you got there?
I've got a radio guide from February 1977, WYSO, when we were 91.5 FM. It's got this beautiful drawing on the cover. Let's open it up very carefully, because this newsprint is pretty old. We've got some letters from community members to the station, a really cool community media workshop ad here.
Oh, look, this is when Joanne Wallace left for KPFA.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Ads for second time around, and what other businesses do we have here?
The organic grocery.
Yeah, Modern Times Bookstore. I don't remember that one on Salem Avenue. A place to go for books and periodicals on society, feminism, music, and a lot more.
Oh, great. Here's the schedule.
Yeah, so as you can see, like, there are a bunch of different things happening here. The show names are great, and there are a lot of different styles of music. So there's Gumbo Ya-Ya in the jazz idiom.
Larry Bloodshow. I remember it well.
And we've got, what else? Straight No Chaser, another jazz program. Walking in the Parlor, hosted by Al Turnbull. Women in Music, of course.
Blues for the Swing Shift with Art Snyder. Yeah.
It's a classic. And here is the thing I actually really wanted to show you, Jocelyn. A focus on A Touch of Gale, which was Phyllis Brzozowska's show.
Oh, wow.
You were a Celtic fan.
I absolutely.
Did you listen to Phyllis?
I did listen to Phyllis. Maybe not back in this period of time, but shortly after. One of her other, Celtic Folkweave I listened to.
Oh, yeah. The show that kind of followed this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Several shows went through several different name changes.
Yeah. But definitely. Well, the reason was because I didn't really start playing Celtic music myself until sometime after this. I played the flute and mm-hmm. I learned the tin whistle for a friend's wedding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was after this period, which is we're in 1977 right here.
Yeah.
But my friend's name was Molly Malone.
Oh, okay.
So that gave me, an incentive to learn some Irish music, to learn some Celtic music and on traditional instruments and, some traditional tunes themselves.
Well, and Phyllis says, to open up this essay about her show, quote, "Any folk tradition needs revitalizing in order to survive," which really speaks to her work both here on WYSO and beyond with city folk, which is kind of what we're talking about today. You're listening to Rediscovered Radio, women's voices, women's music, in the WYSO archives. I'm Juliette Frumhold, WYSO's music director.
And I'm Jocelyn Robinson, director of radio preservation and archives at WYSO. In addition to audio, the WYSO archive is home to decades of paper program guides, going all the way back to the station's founding in 1958 and through the late 1990s when, like everything else, WYSO's schedule went online. The program guides range from modest brochures and booklets in the early days to large-scale foldouts on newsprint by the 1970s. The WYSO schedule, featuring sometimes outrageous show names, would be accompanied by news about station happenings and local events, ads for area record stores and other small businesses, and articles introducing new hosts. The guides were mailed out to station supporters, but they were also available at shops around the Miami Valley in hopes of attracting new ears to the airwaves.
In 1974, Phyllis Brzozowska was back in Dayton after spending time studying abroad in Poland. She made a discovery by picking up a WYSO program guide.
On Thursday mornings from 9 to 11, there was a Celtic music show, and it was hosted by an Antioch student named Harry Callahan. It was called These Glad Tidings Be Shared. And I was really interested because when I was in Poland, of all places, I got introduced to really traditional Irish music, one of my fellow students, was from Ireland, and she had records of the Chieftains and Planxty and all these early groups. And that was the first time I had ever heard really traditional Irish music. And before that, I thought Irish music was McNamara's Band and My Wild Irish Rose and, you know, these sort of barroom songs, popularized songs. I'd never heard the real traditional bagpipes and fiddle and flute and concertina. And so when I tuned into this show on WYSO, it was the only place that I knew of to hear that music.
Phyllis rearranged her schedule so she could listen to Celtic music on WYSO every Thursday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. But then, one day,
Harry Callahan announces that he's graduating from Antioch and this is his last show. And I was like, what? So I called up the station. I called him up. And I said, wait a minute. What do you mean it's your last show? What's going to happen? And he said, well, unless somebody takes over the show, there won't be one. And so I said, well, what do you have to do to take over a show? And he said, well, you need a third-class radio license and you need some records. And I said, I have some records. I think I had two. But that's some.
Phyllis reached out to WYSO and started the process of obtaining her third-class radio license and ended up taking her final licensing test with Bluegrass host Kathy Estep, who we met last episode. Phyllis says she passed the largely technical exam by the skin of her teeth. Then it was time to program her show.
So I was like, oh my God, I better get some music. And I did go to Gem City Records at the time, and they might have had two or three records that I could buy. You know, the Chieftains were on a major label, and I think I found a Horse Lips record. But I wrote to all these record companies and said, I'm doing a radio show, and several of them did respond. I remember Green Linnet. And so I got this big influx of music, and which was fabulous because I discovered artists that I was not aware of, and I had some music to program.
In November 1976, Phyllis Brzozowska launched A Touch of Gale, Monday afternoons on WYSO. Celtic music was considered part of the folk tradition and appeared on WYSO's schedule alongside shows like Sing 'Cause the Sun's Up and Folk Festival USA, which played more common American folk tunes alongside novelty songs and paired with trivia. But Celtic music as a genre had a lot more in common with bluegrass in the late 70s.
There was a revival of traditional music in the British Isles and in Ireland that was well underway. And when I first got introduced to Irish music in 1973, 74, there were very few bands that were known and recording, but that they were just starting. There was this whole movement to bring a vitality and an energy into traditional music. And so thus more younger people were playing and more bands were being formed. The tradition was one of more solo artists or playing for dances. And younger artists or artists, you know, in their early 20s were very influenced by rock and roll. And so ensemble playing that was had a drive and a excitement to it and even maybe a, you know, needed to compete with rock and roll at the time. And so there was a lot of interesting, you know, fun stuff that was happening. In
new audiences were starting to discover Celtic music just as Phyllis had. And this time she was the one getting to share the music, which sometimes had some unexpected results.
I remember going to a yoga class at Antioch. And oddly enough, the yoga instructor invited people to bring in their favorite music to play during the class. And one day, somebody, you know, offered up a tape, and it was my show. It was so... because, you know, there was the music, and then it broke away to my voice, you know, announcing. It was kind of embarrassing. I mean, I didn't quite know how to react to that, but it kind of disrupted the feel of the yoga class, for me at least.
I was going to say that has to be the most surreal experience, to be like doing yoga and then suddenly
your voice comes your voice up in the speakers. Yeah.
You know, it's funny how people get involved with WYSO. There's so many different stories about chance meetings at a concert or hearing something and being so intrigued that somebody calls up and just has to know who that artist is or what have you. I mean, there's so many ways.
Yeah, stopping by the station to visit a friend who is on the air, and then suddenly you're in the host chair. We have had people throughout our history come to us all different ways, all different methods, and finding out this programming really ends up in some unexpected places, like a yoga class.
So yeah, you know, there were a lot of bluegrass performances that WYSO was involved in. But I think it's really important to note that, you know, other folk traditions might have been around, but they sure didn't get the same kind of concert promotion or airtime that bluegrass was getting.
Definitely not in this area. And, you know, that was something that Phyllis was actually going to find herself in a position to change.
The root of bluegrass music is Celtic music. And the Celtic music revival had found a home and an audience with WYSO. But in the late 1970s, local audiences really didn't have many opportunities to experience the music live, but that would soon change.
There was a teacher in town, fabulous teacher named Ann Richens, who had an Irish dance school. Ann was from Dublin. And so my cousins took Irish dance classes, and they would perform at the Dayton World Fair. Well, I would go and see them perform, and one year, probably late 70s, I went to see them, and there was a tin whistle player playing for them live, because mostly they danced to recorded music. And this guy was really good. He was really good. So I went up to this guy, and I, you know, who are you? And turned out it was Larry McCullough.
Still performing the tin whistle today, Larry McCullough is a member of the Devilish Mary, a Pittsburgh band that combines Celtic and Appalachian folk influences.
At the time, there was a pretty thriving square and contra dance community, but mostly played to recorded music. And I had also been to some Irish Cayleys that Ann Richens, the dance teacher, had organized, and they danced to recorded music. And so when I heard Devilish Mary and heard that they did old-timey and Irish and they played for contra dances in Pittsburgh, I was like, wow, can you guys play for a Cayley? And so I contacted Ann Richens and I said, let's do a Cayley with live music. And so we organized it. It was at the Liederkranz Club in Dayton. And we brought in Devilish Mary, and it was mostly the local Irish dance community that came, and we did a Cayley with live music. It wasn't long after that I got a phone call from somebody saying that the band De Dannen, which was one of my favorite bands at the time, was going to be traveling through the area, and they were going to be in Cincinnati, and they were looking for a couple more gigs in the area. And if they could get two more gigs and fill out the weekend, it would be $500 a night. And that just the prospect of seeing Dead Dan, I mean, my absolute favorite Irish band, live in Dayton, Ohio. I couldn't fathom not making it happen. So I was doing the show at YSO at the time, and was able to rent Kelly Hall, and I organized this concert with Dead Dan. And I remember thinking, well, I just need $500. If I can sell 100 tickets at $5 a head, I can pay the band, and I get to see Dead Dan. And so we did the concert. I think we sold more than 100 tickets, and it was successful. But after that, people got the idea that I was a promoter. And so I was getting calls from all kinds of bands to present them in Dayton, Ohio. And I would do a few shows here and there if it was somebody I liked and was interested. And actually, one of the bands I did another concert here on Antioch campus was Clannad, the group Clannad, which was pretty amazing.
Initially, you got started presenting music just as a fan. Like, this was not initially something that you from a young age said, I want to put on concerts. Mm-hmm. It was just, here's a band coming to town and I want to see them, and I think other people do too. Let's figure out a way to make it work.
Exactly. And also, how else is, the best band of traditional Irish music in Ireland ever going to be heard by people in Dayton, Ohio, Actually, I'm remembering this story now that was part of the creation of City Folk. So Tony Horiza and Barb Tuss and I and maybe somebody else from the original founding group used to go to square dances, and we would go down to Cincinnati. And I remember we were driving home late at night on a Saturday night after having danced, and we're driving back to Dayton. And I remember us saying, why do we have to go to Cincinnati to do the things we love? And it was shortly after that. I mean, actually, came out of that inquiry and that yearning to be able to participate. Tony found this grant opportunity and said, let's organize some things here. So it was all about, let's have the things we love to hear and do and see here in Dayton.
I'm smiling because there's a group of us right now that are trying to do kind of the same thing, that are saying those same things, like, why do we have to go to Cincinnati and Columbus?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why can't we have them here? And why can't folks from other cities come here to enjoy what we have to offer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Do it. I say do it. I often said that City Folk could happen because it is a town big enough that there's enough resources, but it's small enough that there's nobody that can tell you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can make things happen here. You really can.
The grant opportunity Phyllis's friend Tony Horiza found was the Joint Program in Folk Arts and Culture, a collaboration between Ohio Arts Council and Ohio Humanities Council to fund programs that had both an arts and a humanities component. Many artists and media makers who had spent time at WYSO, including Julia Reichert and Jim Klein, lived near Phyllis's Five Oaks neighborhood in Dayton and had experience with Ohio Arts Council grants. They started talking to Phyllis about applying for a grant for a concert series.
And so we got together around our kitchen table and dreamt up this project where we would have, of course, an Irish music concert, but we'd have an African drumming and dance event. We'd have a storytelling event. We'd have a Greek and Balkan dance workshop at the Greek Orthodox Church. All the events were held at different churches in Five Oaks, except for the concert. The Irish concert was held at the Victoria Theater at the time. So we put together it was a year-long of a series of events to celebrate folk art and culture in our neighborhood, and we needed to come up with a name for it, and I think it was Tony who came up with the name City Folk. So that first series was called the City Folk Folk Art Series.
After that first series of events, Phyllis and her collaborators decided to take an event series and turn it into an organization devoted to presenting traditional and folk arts. They gathered a handful of board members, and the City Folk Folk Arts Series became a new local nonprofit, simply called City Folk. As the new organization began to grow, Phyllis gave up her show on WYSO to learn her new role as an arts administrator.
I started becoming a presenter because I loved the music and really wanted to hear it myself. Becoming an arts administrator happened the same way. I didn't, you know, grow up saying, I'm going to be an arts administrator when I grow up. I learned it. City Folk was a perfect training ground to learn how to become an arts administrator. And luckily at the time, the Ohio Arts Council and various other entities, the Association of Performing Arts Presenters at the time, had workshops and seminars and things. And I just took every opportunity I could to learn, you know, how do you create a board? How do you build a budget? How do you do marketing? You know, how do you manage a staff? Because I knew none of that. But I wanted to keep presenting.
The music Phyllis and City Folk were presenting was already moving well beyond Irish, English, and European folk traditions. Artists and sounds from around the world, including the Global South, were starting to emerge.
What was also happening at the time was the explosion of what's called world music, or what was being called world music at the time. So, you know, Paul Simon's Graceland and Ladysmith Black Mambazo was becoming known, and all these bands from Africa, Fela, and et cetera. I mean, there just was an explosion. I think later came Buena Vista Social Club, but still music from South America and from Cuba, you know, was emerging and just becoming more available, and a lot of which I really love, too. So my own personal tastes were a lot broader than just Irish music. I do remember that at the time, part of my vision was to really pick artists that I've really believed in and felt had the strongest integrity, especially if it was something really different that not a lot of people were interested in. To me, it was really important that the artists be really excellent, so that, for instance, you know, maybe a traditional Finnish group, people would say, well, I don't know anything about Finnish music, but I know if City Folk is doing it, it's going to be good. So to have that to build that reputation of quality and excellence was really important to me.
For its first decade and a half, City Folk presented diverse folk music and dance from a variety of cultures in venues and community spaces around Dayton, including some of the places Phyllis had booked her own early concerts, like Jilly's, Sam's Bar and Grill, and Canal Street Tavern. In 1996, the National Folk Festival chose City Folk as its partner to bring the traveling festival to Dayton for a three-year residency. The three-day summer festival, which took place at Courthouse Square, featured performers and craftspeople and a dance pavilion. Phyllis stepped down as City Folk's executive director in 1997 and continued her career as an arts administrator. And when the National Folk Festival residency ended, City Folk decided to carry on the already beloved festival as a local effort.
Good afternoon, Dayton. City Folk, one of the greatest organizations in town, is proud to
The City
present
Folk
this
Festival,
summer's
as
festival.
It became known in 1999, brought global sounds to the Miami Valley. Here's Eastern European band Harmonia performing at the 2010 festival.
City Folk Festival was a staple of Miami Valley summers, and City Folk continued to present Celtic and world music concerts, along with jazz, blues, and bluegrass throughout the year. The organization's finances suffered due to the Great Recession, which was the final blow to Dayton's already waning manufacturing industry. Successive years of bad weather for the summer festival didn't help matters, and the organization ultimately disbanded in 2013.
And Jocelyn, that was a real loss for our community to lose City Folk.
Oh, it really was. Not only was it an incredible opportunity to hear and see musicians, dancers, craftspeople from all over the world, it really was a boost to the local economy. And many local artists, too, had the opportunity to shine during the City Folk Festival.
Yeah, very often our own artists, most of whom were performing in that sort of bluegrass Appalachian folk space, got to share stages with some beloved national artists and international artists as well. And for the audience members, just to be a person walking around downtown Dayton and to be able to walk into a festival space that's free and open to the public and experience music from cultures very different than your own, that's a priceless experience.
It truly is. And I think it was also an introduction to lots of different types of music to a lot of people in the community.
Definitely. And, you know, people have tried to keep the spirit of City Folk going, certainly the University of Dayton's art series. And more recently, Levitt Pavilion has really been taking up that mantle of free music presentation with an eye to diversity and global sounds. And it's been exciting to see an organization like that bringing that free, accessible summer music back to downtown Dayton in the summertime.
Yeah, but you know, what about the Celtic music on WYSO? You know, I mean, it was happening here in the community, and it was on the airwaves, too.
I listened to it every week, and I had never heard Celtic music before that, really. I mean, everybody's heard some of the St. Patrick stuff, but not the real stuff. And I just loved that music. And it just, I have one Irish guy in my family history way, way back. I don't have any Celtic roots to go back to, but it doesn't matter because it still grabs you.
That's Cindy Funk, host of the Dear Green Place, WYSO's current Celtic music show that airs on Sunday afternoons. She started volunteering at WYSO in the late 1970s, helping out with the station's fundraising auctions. When Phyllis eventually gave up her show to focus on growing City Folk in its early years, Cindy was ready to step up to the microphone.
But at some point I decided, being a very shy person originally, that I would like to host a show on WYSO, and I would like to do the Celtic show on WYSO. And so I went into the station. I had a meeting with Larry Blood, who was a program director at that point in time. We didn't have a cool music director at that point in time. And had a meeting with Larry, and he asked me a lot of very hard questions. And then he finally told me, well, Cindy, I just don't think you're ready for this right now. And I was heartbroken, but I went away. He said, you keep listening and learning. And that may not have been exactly what he said, but that's what he told me. So I was crestfallen, but I did that. I listened and I listened, and I listened, and I collected. And then there came a time when they needed a host for that show, and he called me. So I think it was like 1985 that I started with that show. Back when it was in the Student Union Building, the little tiny, grotty little studio we had with two turntables, and that was about it. And started off my show. My first show was called Shamrocks, Heather, and Roses, because I wanted to get English, Scottish, and Irish in there someplace. I don't know if anybody else made that connection, but it was important to me.
I asked Cindy what it was like at WYSO in the 80s.
We had children's programming. We had women's programming that I really still miss. And well, we had polka for a while, but that didn't last very long. It was sort of an interesting thing. There was a tad more indigenous, not Indian, but, you know, everybody's historical music, German and all that stuff. We had a good cross-section, but Saturday programming was important, as it is now, for people. And we had, you know, just lots of small things, lots of strange things going on in the middle of the night, I will tell you that.
Cindy's first stint on WYSO lasted only a few years. In 1987, she was part of a wave of programmers who lost their shows due to changing station management, a trend that would continue into the 90s and reach a boiling point in 2002. We'll talk more about that in our next episode.
But in 2005, Cindy returned to the airwaves.
We're going to go to one of the one of the most celebrated voices in Celtic music, especially Irish music. Here's Andy Irvine on the Deer Green Place.
She was part of the first wave of volunteer music programmers invited back to WYSO. That's when she launched her current show, The Deer Green Place. I was also part of that effort of bringing volunteers back to the station, starting to volunteer myself in 2006. At that time, WYSO's music offerings were far less eclectic than when Cindy was first on the air.
Why do you think it's important to have, especially like different traditional music or culturally centric music on the radio in a local community?
Well, there's always someone in your community that has family that takes them back to certain countries. And they might like to hear something from their history. Maybe not. A lot of times for a lot of the folk music, it's people like folk music, and it can be from America. It can be from Ireland. It can be from South America. They like to mix it up, and they like to hear all of it because it's just like listening to the world, whether you're related to it or not. And sometimes they're linked to it by their heritage, and sometimes it doesn't matter. They want to listen to it anyway. I would hasten to say that probably at least half of my audience, maybe more, have no Irish or Scottish blood in them. they love the music. It makes them feel, and it makes them happy. And maybe make them dance a few steps. I would hope that on a Sunday that's happening in a kitchen somewhere.
Well, you know, we do still have bluegrass, and it's still happening on Saturday nights and on Sunday morning. And, mm-hmm. You know, that tradition, I think, helps to keep some of that same energy alive. But we have a lot of other things, too, although, you know, we certainly don't have the diversity of musical shows that we did back in the 70s and 80s.
Right, yeah. Our programming back then was far more patchwork with these really fascinating juxtapositions. You know, you would have things like polka next to traditional Indian classical music, for example. And you don't see that on our schedule as much. The kind of patchwork nature has been replaced with more of the NPR storytelling programming. But we do have, you know, everything from a new show that features a variety of genres from Louisiana to jazz still, to things like hip hop, which have become, you know, a relatively newer genre. I mean, a 50-year-old genre at least at this point. But also a genre that is very culturally important to the people living in this community now.
I think the spirit is still there, just appreciating different genres of music. And you can still listen to WYSO in a day and hear a little bit of everything.
That's absolutely true.
One of those genres that we miss is definitely women's music.
Speaking of that, on our next episode, we'll be meeting the hosts of Women in Music, which is one of WYSO's best-known shows, hosted by a collective of women. And here's how Cindy describes them.
They were a powerful bunch of women. And it was really great. And they felt it. And boy, the music they played made you feel it, too. And it was really, really a great show and really powerful.
All coming up on Rediscovered Radio, Women's Voices, Women's Music in the WYSO Archives. This episode was written and produced by me, Juliet Frumholt, with Jocelyn Robinson. Sound designed by Tom Amrine. Jesse Dukes is our editor.